This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations. Recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
I'm Finlay Mason and I am with
Keith Clark.
Now, Keith, we've went through on earlier conversations your early life, your education, your training college days and then your early school appointments. I'd like now perhaps to move on to where you became interested in teaching teachers. How did that come about?
Well, it happened over a period of time. I had a lot of experience as principal of a small schools, and I'd used that experience to get a more or less an understanding of how much help was needed when young teachers came into sort of remote school situations and sort of couldn't get very much help. So I managed to get appointed to a job as an advisor to country schools with the Whangarei Board here. And so I lived in Palmerston North and used to work in the region of country schools all round this area, right up the Pohangana Valley and then way up as far as Wairuru and Tamarunui and then back through the Arua here. And it was a job that took me through a lot of the countryside, and at that stage I did a lot of work with young teachers who'd been freshly appointed and weren't sure what their curriculum was, just how to organise their classes and how to use the talent that was already in the school as far as the children were concerned.
Did this entail visiting them in their school of appointment?
Yes, I used to leave home about 7:30 in the morning. Fortunately, I'd been able to afford a big Holden station wagon at the time, and I used to do the rounds of the cardboard shops, factories here. So I would take up a great pile of white cardboard and any other small stuff like that I could find that would be helpful to them. So I'd make an appointment to be at a certain school by perhaps 9 o'clock or 9:30 in the morning, and so I would work with the teachers during the day, watch what they were doing and what the kids were doing, and then we would stop in the afternoon after school and we would talk for probably a couple of hours or so about what they were doing and what I'd noticed, and then, you know, I'd ask them what they wanted help with. And so I worked that way, and then at night I usually had a parent-teacher group in that area, and they would want to know about new maths or new sciences that were coming through, different aspects of teaching coming through at the time. So I would talk to them about that, get back to my motel somewhere about 11:30 or something at night, and often then I had an essay to write for varsity here in Palmerston North, because I was still working on academic stuff as well. So it was a pretty hectic life. And next morning I'd be off to another school somewhere or another teacher. And then what I used to do, if I found, say, a young new appointee was having trouble teaching reading or teaching math or whatever it was, I would go up and take her class and send her down to, say, the Central Normal School here or the College Street Normal School or Intermediate Normal, whatever the level was, and they would work with them for the day, and that would give them some sort of help. Also, I arranged little groups of the sole charge schools and small schools, and I'd base them on a big school. For instance, in Taihape, I'd arrange for Utaku and some of the little ones further out to come in to the school on a particular day. I'd arrange this with the board so that, you know, they were allowed to release the kids for the day or have the day off or whatever it was. Sometimes it was a Saturday. And so we would group together under a topic. We would say, all right, we're going to look at social studies curriculum. And so we would look at the sort of topics that were worth doing and how they would go about it and so on.
This approach would have been quite new, quite innovative. You got good support from the board?
The board helped me all the way around. Yes, they were very helpful. The inspectors were very keen. And so, and then we would have occasional, perhaps twice a year, we'd have a field day in which the children would play sport of some sort.
Oh, yes.
And we'd get all the sole charges in that little group together. So it became a sort of a family, because we used to bring the mums and their little kids along too. So the mothers got a chance to talk to each other, because, you know, part of a teacher in a sole charge school in a back blocks is that socially they don't get a great deal of interaction anywhere. So it was good for them to talk together in those sort of days. So it was a sort of happy family kind of arrangement. And they got a lot of professional help. I had the opportunity, if I needed to get people from Wellington, the top experts from Wellington, and I could arrange for them to come up, and they would spend a day with a group like that. And so progress was very good. And the groups are still working. They've still got the Pohongana one, which is based on Ashurst. They've still got the Arua one, which is based on Rongotia. So it's sort of it was an ongoing thing that survived very well.
Mm. And you would have been recognised for what you were doing, and
yes.
The board saw possibilities of applying your talents in various ways.
I'd just come back from England, and I'd been working on new maths over in England at Oxford, I was doing a lot of in-service work. And after I'd been working for a couple of years, I realised that the social study curriculum could do with some revision. And so I combined with one of the science people and rewrote a whole series of lessons or topics based on man and his world. Because the point of view I made was that it's man that's changing the world, and that the changes in the world were very significant in terms of how people lived, and this was the social studies aspect of it. So we used Japan as one example, and so on. It went all over New Zealand. It got viral, the particular type of thing, and so that was an important aspect. And when I was working with these young teachers, I began to realise that perhaps there were big gaps in their training that needed more practical look at some of their training, particularly organisation. And so Teachers College thought, there must have been a pipeline of information going somewhere, because they asked me if I would go in and spend the last 2 or 3 weeks with third-year students before they went out into schools, and if I would run workshops for them. So I came in and to college then, every year from then on, and I ran a whole series of practical workshops, you know, how to get a classroom ready for the children, have place names ready, have lots of maths apparatus made up ready, and things like that.
What era are we talking about here? Had Training College moved down to the Hokowhetu campus at this stage?
Initially it was at the site where the UCOL is now.
Yes.
But then we moved down to, well, initially it was all over the place. We were in halls. We were in the Anglican Hall at some, you know, All Saints and so on. We had a Catholic one at down... I can't remember the street now, but in that area.
No doubt that was the driver to establish the campus down in Hokowhetu.
And so that was while the campus was being established. So after I was an advisor like this, and I became on the Principals Association, and I became part of the, Friday, I used to also go to the Education Board, where we had meetings with the inspectorate and all those sort of people, talking about things that we thought we should be working on. And
you were able to observe these things and actually get them support and put them in place. Do you think that still exists with the current move away from the boards?
No, it's not the same at all. No, it's something I think they've left... It's a bad move at the moment that they're trying to build it up again, but you know, in those days we had a maths advisor, a reading advisor, a science advisor, a phys ed advisor, an art advisor, rural advisors. You know, it was
These people had the freedom to put their own view into practice.
Yes. And I had the right. I know on two occasions I got one reliever removed out of the school very quickly. Merv Wisely was the senior inspector at the time, and he backed me all the time. If I said to him, look, this teacher's got to go, she's not doing what she should be, right. They were out.
And of course, under those circumstances, you would work with the person for a while and just... come to the conclusion eventually that they were not going to change.
There were some that I said, these are quite good teachers, but they cannot organise and cannot get on with the parents in the area. And so I said, I've no doubt about their teaching, but they just can't seem to communicate with the parents.
Yeah.
And so on two or three occasions, I had these people move sideways to a bigger school again somewhere where they were... They were not downgraded at all, but they were just shifted out of that environment.
Yes.
So it was an interesting one. I remember one occasion that Merv Wisely said to me, look, I want you to go up to Utiku for a week or two and take over the school. He said, we've lost a teacher there and a reliever in, and the kids have gone berserk. He said, there's some very naughty Form 1 and 2 kids up there, and they need taking down a peg. Have you still got a strap? So I went up and spent a week at the school, and yes, there were some pretty naughty senior kids there, and I lined them up and said, look, you cut this behaviour out or I'm going to use this. And they looked at me and looked me in the eye, and I think they got the message because it calmed down. And so in about a week or 10 days, there was another appointee and everything settled down again from there on. But, there were some days, and I can tell you what, on the road all the time was not easy. You know, in those backcountry roads behind Hunterville with Papa, it used to take me about 2 or 3 hours to tidy up the Holden afterwards, because the brakes would hardly work with all the Papa on them and things like that.
It was a big area you had to cover, that's for sure.
Yes, it was, and I had to stay overnight, often in motels. Sometimes the teachers would say, "You can come and stay with me if you like." One of them became a good friend. I used to go up deer stalking with him then. I'd stay for the weekend and go deer stalking. So they were a lot of fun. But anyway, the point is that at this time, I learned a great deal about what help young teachers needed, and the Teachers College got to know what I was doing, and so they said, "Well, look, I think we could use you here." So when a job came up, the principal said, "I think, would you apply for that job?" So so that was it.
And that then was when you became a permanent tutor at the
Teachers College.
Right.
I was about 40, just over 40, and at that stage I had top grading for teaching purposes. I was very well graded, and I had the choice of several careers at that stage. The inspectors were telling me, "I think we'd like you on our staff." I had the grading to get one of the big schools here as a principal. The department in Wellington wanted me to go down there and start writing more curriculum for them on social studies and things like that. And I had the Teachers College opportunity as well. So I took the Teachers College opportunity simply because I had a family coming up through going through school. I didn't want to change all that sort of...
And not only that, it was obviously an area that you had a great deal of interest in.
That's right.
You could make a big contribution.
Yes. So I became in charge of the practical training of students at the college, and we had about 1,500 students at that time, so it was a very big job. And I found myself on the road again, mainly because I wanted to get these students into classrooms where the teachers were very, very good in their particular areas or generally. And so I worked from New Plymouth then to Gisborne to right down the coast here, right through Marston, all down those areas, over to Napier. Yeah. And I would work with principals in those areas and say, "Now, who have you got on your staff that you think could teach a student the basis of, you know, teaching in these subjects?" And so I made my own list up of people that I thought. And so I then pushed at college to get as much practical training for them as possible. I got up to 25 weeks, which was, you know, a little more than normal. And so I got to the stage where I insisted that every student went through every class level from kindergarten right through to Form 2. So they had a period at each of those. In the third year, they had a chance to choose what area they wanted to specialise in, more or less. And when it came to their probationary year going out, I was able to... I often used to go and talk to the inspectors in the areas. I got on good terms with those people. And so we would work together at the end of the year to try and coordinate where these students could go in their area to good schools and good opportunities. So it was a sort of a, you know, give and take sort of arrangement.
Coming back to the college then, you spoke of a roll of 1,500.
Yes.
How many staff would you have to teach them, and what was the sort of structure of that sort of teaching arrangement?
I had another staff member and a secretary, full-time secretary, to help with all the basis. But when I was arranging to go out to schools, I would ask all the subject areas to provide a list of tasks at that particular stage for them to try out while they were out in schools. So that would be part of, they would bring that to me and I would go over it with them and maybe make a few amendments or whatever it is, and then that would become part of a structure of information to go out to the teachers, the associates that were going to work with these youngsters for, you know, whatever time it was. For instance, the first years, they'd be, have to read a story and find and get some information out of that story to progress with the children. As they went on, they'd get more difficult tasks, like they'd have to do some maths experiments with them and things like that. So it was a sort of a...
So your tutors taught their specialist area, did they?
Yes.
Okay, then.
Well, not always. There was the general part of it as well.
Right.
But if I had an art student, I would try to get him placed with a teacher that was doing well in art,
right.
You know.
Right.
And so they'd get sort of... They had to do all the other tasks as well, but they would get that flavour of art out of that teaching period with them. So it was quite interesting. And I was also doing a second stage B.Ed. paper on how teachers teach and how children learn. That was the basis of the paper that I was taking. So, busy life.
Thus, you remained with the training college for the rest of your career?
I stayed there, yes, right through then for about the next, I think, 16 years or so. And each time I wanted to, I'd start thinking again and talking about, they would promote me to something else. So I went up from, just a lecturer to a senior lecturer to a principal lecturer. So they kept pushing me along.
In an earlier conversation, you spoke of a time you spent in Australia and had tempting offers made to you there.
Yes.
Was that, again, an exchange process?
Yes, an exchange process.
Okay, then.
And I think I learned quite a lot from textbook is not the way to approach individual children.
Mm-hmm.
The Australians had formal textbooks and they kept their kids to that the whole year, whereas I found that there were a range of children in a task. Some had difficulty coping with a textbook, others it was too easy. So I used to group the children so that I had a range of opportunities for them, and that they made very good progress if they were able to. So it went on, pretty well. So, and secondly, while I was in Australia, I lived next to what they called a summer sea camp. Now, this camp was, it had about 40 beds or something, and enough for two or three teachers. And then it had a set... big area out on the sea, and they had kayaks and dinghies, and they had big aquariums. And this was for inland children from Central Australia to come to a seaside and learn about the sea and all the animals and mollusks and everything in the sea. Now, when I came back, I said, we're not doing enough in this area either. Let's see if we can start something. So I talked to, again, the inspectors about it, and then the advisors as well, and we all got very enthusiastic about the chance to take our city children out into the country somewhere. And at that stage, there was a school in the middle of the King Country, a three-teacher school became available, empty, no one there in it. So we said, let's set up camp. And it was... It was on the road between the Chateau and Tongariro.
Right.
And so it had a house.
Yes.
And it had about four classrooms. And we sent up two bunk rooms and and then a common room with a fire and everything in it and so on. And so we arranged a program. We had Te Kuti had a redoubt in the area, mm-hmm. so we formed a place with a big tape recorder that could give Maori a Maori war dance, that sort of thing, a haka, and we would get the children to try and attack the redoubt. That was an interesting one for them. Then we had an old mill, and we called it the Haunted Mill, and there were old cars and all sorts of things still around there, and we used to take them on this, and they had to write stories about it. Then we'd take them up onto the chateau area, and the people there had a marvellous video sort of thing that they could show them, and they showed them all the aspects of the mountain and so on. So a week there...
Do you recall the name of that camp?
No,
I can't. I know of it, but and then so out of your trip to Australia grew that move, and of course we had Sixtus Lodge here locally, didn't
yes,
we?
Yes, and that came later. Yes,
indeed.
Yeah, and that was very good. There was a lot of them then, sort of established throughout the country, and it was good because I think it gave kids a different outlook on.
It does.
Yes, on their environment, anyway.
It does indeed.
Unfortunately, there have been some nasty accidents, but there we are. Yep. You can't do things sometimes without some risk.
I think all of us bringing up children realise that there are going to be times when you just can't protect them from everything.
Yes.
And,
we had plenty of parents with us all the time, and that was a help, great help.
Yeah.
And the other thing was that... While I was in England, I learnt maths. I learnt a lot about early new maths, and then it was interesting to come back to see that, you know, New Zealand was doing very well generally in its approach to education. It was far more formal and there were lots of barriers for children in England, and I was glad to see that we hadn't developed, or we weren't developing that kind of thing here.
Academic barriers or social barriers? Or
a bit of all that. Yes. Yeah, you know, in England, you know, my son got he topped the 11 plus exam. He was 10 and he got the 11 plus exam. Well, he got a scholarship to one of those Pluty private schools. That was the first the school had ever had, and they couldn't understand why. I said, oh no, I'm coming back to New Zealand, bringing my children back to go into the ordinary public school. That was quite beyond their comprehension at the time.
Yes.
Because it would have been, you know... a life for him, he would have gone into this prep school and gone on from there. Yeah. He came back here and did the same sort of thing.
It's interesting, this discussion that's taking place now about teaching New Zealand history. It was something in the small country schools that I grew up on.
Yes.
Our local history was very much part of our curriculum, actually.
Yes, yes. That was always a unit.
Yes indeed, but... I was surprised to hear that we'd lost that to some extent,
yes.
And that it's being reintroduced.
Yes, yes.
So that's a good move.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to Manawatū Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatū People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatū Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.